Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. As if the residents of Gaza needed any more violence, a number of bombings have been documented over the past couple of months aimed at Hamas by rivals who claim allegiance to the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, or ISIS. Now, a group affiliated with ISIS has reportedly released a video threatening Hamas, which said, quote, "We will uproot the state of the Jews, Israel, and you, and Fatah, and all of the secularists are nothing, and you will be overrun by our creeping multitudes. The rule of Islamic law will be implemented in Gaza in spite of you," end of quote. As if beginning to make good on that promise, more than 50 people were killed in the Egyptian Sinai yesterday, right by the Gaza border, in attacks linked to ISIS. But the people of Gaza are still recovering from the horrors of last year's brutal Israeli war, during which thousands of Palestinians were killed, among them hundreds of children. A UN commission report on the war has already garnered controversy for daring to point out Israeli war crimes. Joining me now is Max Blumenthal. He's a senior writer for Alternet and the award-winning author of Goliath and Republican Gomorrah. His latest book just out now is called The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. He's coming to Southern California next week as part of his book tour for an event with Uprising, where I'll be interviewing him on stage. Welcome to the program, Max.
Good to be with you.
Well, first, what do you make of this ISIS threat to Gaza and to Hamas?
It's interesting to watch. I mean, for the past decade, there have been about a few hundred extreme Salafist activists inside the Gaza Strip. Now they may number in the thousands, and we see mysterious bombings taking place at Hamas installations and at places like the French Cultural Center. No one quite knows who's behind all of these bombings, but now these ISIS-related elements or Salafist elements who are claiming some kind of linkage to the Islamic State are taking responsibility. And you know what I can deduce is that the despair in the Gaza Strip after a war that left 18,000 homes destroyed, 2,200 people dead, over 10,000 wounded, and not one home has been rebuilt. No reconstruction money has come in, and people are still living under a kind of a crushing and very repressive situation, is that the despair is breeding radicalization. That's what has happened. That's one of the factors that the Islamic State has benefited from across the Middle East, and now they're trying to exploit the despair in the Gaza Strip to make a kind of power play. The strategy that they put in place, which is interesting, is that they have attacked Israel while Hamas is doing all it can to maintain the ceasefire. They attack with rudimentary rockets and mortars, which are easy to come by, knowing that Israel will in turn attack Hamas. So instead of attacking Hamas directly, they have a tacit alliance with Israel against Hamas. And so this dynamic is kind of interesting to watch. They're actually not, they have no intention of fighting the Jewish state right now. They actually have a quietist approach. The same approach that Hamas maintained throughout the 70s and early 80s when Israel was allowing it to operate freely in the Gaza Strip to undercut the PLO.
So it's interesting to sort of wonder whether ISIS is playing into Israel's critique of Hamas or working against it. What you're saying is it sounds like it's it is ending up tacitly on the side of Israel. But Hamas itself, in this report, this UN commission report, and in an Amnesty International report that came before it, has been found to be guilty of summary executions of people who were accused of colluding with Israel. Where does this leave Hamas?
Well, some of your listeners might remember Netanyahu going before the UN General Assembly and holding up pictures of the public execution of collaborators and spies in a public park in Gaza City during the war last summer as evidence that Hamas was ISIS and ISIS was Hamas, which is, you know, the kind of idiotic troll propaganda that we see from Netanyahu that appeals to the sensibility of, like, low-level right-wingers who read the New York Post. And he even threw in a Derek Jeter joke for those guys. So that has been kind of, that myth has been kind of exploded by the ISIS attacks on Hamas. They've always condemned Hamas, just as Al-Qaeda did before. Ayman Zawahiri, the spiritual, the kind of mind, the mastermind of Al-Qaeda, has always condemned Hamas. But let's talk about those executions. I mean, this is something that I discuss in my book. They occurred at the end of the war when I was inside the Gaza Strip, and they occurred after the Israeli Air Force assassinated three key leaders of Hamas's armed wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, in the city of Rafah. How did they get the location of these figures? How did they know they were all going to meet in an apartment complex? It was thanks to Israel's Unit 8200, which is the largest unit in the Israeli army. It's the Israel's version of the NSA. And what this unit does, which consists of the best and brightest of Israeli society, is they prey on the weakest people in the Gaza Strip, monitoring their cell phone communications, their online communications, and trying to find who needs emergency medical care inside Israel, who's having an affair and can be blackmailed. They even look for homosexuals, who is homosexual and can be blackmailed. And then they approach them through the Shin Bet, Israel's General Security Service, and offer them either bribes, you know, you can get that cancer treatment with a permit if you agree to spy on your neighbor, or we'll expose you as a homosexual unless you spy on your neighbor. And thanks to Unit 8200 and the Shin Bet, every neighborhood in the Gaza Strip is honeycombed with collaborators and spies who are simply desperate people who've been pressured into spying. It was spies who gave up those locations. And so after the assassination, the outrage was so extreme in Gaza that Hamas emptied the jail of all those accused of collaborating, including people who had nothing to do with the attacks in the current war, brought them into a public park and executed them just to quell the public outrage and to send an example to anyone else who considered who was considering spying. This was really the result of the paranoia of occupation and siege living inside the Panopticon. It's something that any long-term prisoner experiences in prison.
And Max, the UN Commission report, which did, of course, spend a lot of its focus on Israel's crimes, which would make sense given that the majority of people killed in that war were by Israeli forces. What do you make of this report and its importance in the last Israeli war? A UN Commission report known as the Goldstone Report was simply dismissed, and it's assumed that this and that report may feed into some kind of International Criminal Court hearing, but how important is it?
Well, I found this report to be slightly pathetic because it drew a false equivalence between the armed factions in the Gaza Strip,
Right.
who have no air force, who have no navy, and who are fighting under occupation, who are engaging in acts of resistance and were actually defending themselves against an invading army, wound up killing 80 Israeli citizens, 75 of whom were combat soldiers attacking the Gaza Strip, while the Israeli military deliberately targeted civilians, according to its Dahiya doctrine of disproportionate force. One of the most pathetic aspects of this report was the attempt to find evidence that Hamas had used human shields. The UN couldn't find any evidence, but they still repeated conjecture. They found no evidence of human shields. They found no evidence that Hamas had stored weapons in active schools or apartment buildings, as Israel claimed. All that it could find was that rockets were stored in three empty schools, which were not in use. So there was an attempt to validate Israel's propaganda. Meanwhile, when I was in the Gaza Strip, and this is something that I documented extensively in my book, The 51-Day War, I met numerous young men and even entire families who had been used as human shields by Israeli soldiers who were operating inside the Gaza Strip, including Mahmoud Abu Sayyid, a 19-year-old from the southern city of Rafah, who was taken by Israeli soldiers after they shot his father and sent his family marching west, taken into his house, stripped, stood in front of a window, and was used as a human shield. Israeli soldiers shot over his shoulders while they sniped his neighbors and killed two of his neighbors. And then he was taken off in a jeep to a prison for 9 days, where he was held in a dark cell and summoned every few hours for interrogation and beaten. This is a 19-year-old kid, and when I interviewed him about it, he collapsed and had to be revived with water. He was completely traumatized. And so these are the real human shields. One of the interesting things that the UN report does do is it does find that Israel placed its military installations and operated within the civilian population in southern Israel. All of Israeli society is being used as human shields for the military, whether they're in the kibbutzim in the south, where the Israeli artillery unit set up, or in Tel Aviv, where the Israeli Defense Ministry is based in the middle of a civilian neighborhood next to a shopping mall. So by Israel's own logic, they are using Israeli citizens as human shields, because this is the logic that holds that there are no civilians in the Gaza Strip, only, in the words of the Israeli military ethicist Asa Kasher, the terrorist's non-dangerous neighbor. The UN doesn't understand this, and they don't understand occupation, they don't understand Israel's military doctrine, and this report doesn't reflect a true understanding of the parameters that each side is operating under.
Well, Max, I'll be interviewing you on stage next Tuesday in Los Angeles. So I want to save my questions about your book, The 51-Day War, for that time. And let me just let our audience in Southern California know that you're going to be speaking Tuesday, July 7th at the First Congregational Church in Southern California in Los Angeles, 540 South Commonwealth Avenue. Tickets are available to that event at kpfk.org. You can also go to our website, uprisingwithsonali.com. And on the right-hand side, you can click for tickets. They are very limited, and you have been speaking to sold out crowds throughout your book tour. Last night you were in Berkeley, where there were some protesters outside who weren't quite happy with what your book had to say, and I really liked the freedom selfies you posted on Twitter with those protesters. Can you tell us a little bit about the response your book has had?
Well, you know, I've been on, this is my third book tour, and I'm visiting a lot of the same venues that I previously visited, Town Hall in Seattle, and, you know, the famous Powell's Books in Portland, and the First Congregational Church in Berkeley, which is a United Church of Christ church. The United Church of Christ just voted by a measure of 80% to divest from companies involved in the Israeli occupation. And at each of these events, I'm getting more turnout than I ever have before. And I think this isn't just a reflection of support for me or interest in my work. It's because there is a movement out there that's galvanizing around the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement that sees books like mine as, you know, a counter narrative to the dominant mainstream narrative on Israel-Palestine, and embraces them as vehicles. And so I'm speaking to packed houses everywhere. There's an enormous amount of energy out there that I have never seen before. And it's threatening to pro-Israel forces. The right-wing anti-Palestinian group Stand With Us brought out some protesters, and they really represented the future of pro-Israel activism. All of them were over 70 years old, waving, you know, a week after the Confederate flags came down, another symbol of hatred outside my event, and holding bizarre signs about,
by the way, you're referring to the Israeli flag as a symbol of hatred.
I'm referring to the Israeli flag as a symbol of racial exclusivism, hatred, apartheid, and war. And I think that these people are trembling in their boots after watching what happened last week. Their narrative isn't working anymore, and they see the narrative of equality and the promotion of democracy, which is at the heart of the BDS movement, as a direct existential threat. And so does Benjamin Netanyahu. So it was nice to see them out there. It was nice to see how threatened this organization is by me simply talking about the facts on the ground in Gaza, and by so many people gathering to hear it.
And Max, you have also now entered the swirling news cycle around the presidential election, because right-wingers are connecting you to Hillary Clinton, because she claimed to have really liked your first book, Republican Gomorrah. This was before you did your books, Goliath and the 51-Day War on Israel. And so the quote anti-Israel writer Max Blumenthal is being used to bring Hillary Clinton down. What do you make of that?
I'm the new Jeremiah Wright. You know, I just sent Hillary a memo urging her to go full BDS and full communism, and got a really favorable response. She actually has a copy of Goliath, but she carries it around in an Ari Shavit book jacket. so that she'll get, you know, approval from Jeffrey Goldberg. But no, I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. I met her once when I was 16. My father has a relationship with her,
Right.
and you know, I'm his son. He supports what I do because I'm his son, and you know, I'm just kind of amused by the whole thing. If it's just unfortunate that none of these none of the news outlets or fake news outlets that are reporting this will name my first book, which is Republican Gomorrah, and I think it's one of the best surveys of how the radical right took over the Republican Party, and it really will help readers understand the freak show that brought us everything from the Duggar Klan to Mike Huckabee to you know, bizarre racist fanatics like Donald Trump. So, you know, if this can be used to bring, you know, the narrative of Republican Gomorrah to the public and bring this book back, which I'm really proud of, then, you know, fine.
And that was when my first interview with you happened with that book, Republican Gomorrah. I had you in studio for the hour, and it's definitely a brilliant survey of where the right has gone, and certainly worth re-airing that interview as we lead up to the 2016 election. Well, Max, I hope we can also turn out a full house for you next Tuesday at our event, where we will also have copies of your book, The 51-Day War, available for our audience to purchase and get signed by you. And I want to wish you the best of luck until next week. We'll see you then.
Great. Thanks for having me,
Thank you so
Sonali.
much. Max Blumenthal is a senior writer for Alternate. He is an award-winning author. His books include Goliath, his first book, Republican Gomorrah, and his latest book just out now called The 51-Day War, Ruin and Resistance in Gaza. He's coming to Southern California next week, Tuesday, July 1st, as part of his book tour for an uprising event where I'll be interviewing him on stage. And you can get tickets to that event at 54 at kpfk.org. The event is happening at the First Congregational Church of Los Angeles in downtown LA, 540 South Commonwealth Avenue in Los Angeles. The event will also be featuring the acclaimed LA-based poet Sholeh Wolpe. It's going to be a wonderful event, and ticket sales benefit KPFK and specifically the TV production of Uprising. So we really hope you'll come and see Max Blumenthal and give him a Southern California welcome. Again, tickets at kpfk.org or available at uprisingwithsonali.com, and you can find the link to the brown paper tickets link on those websites. And if you have trouble, you can also check out our Facebook page, or you can also email us at mail@uprisingradio.org. This is Uprising. When we come back, we will turn to our ongoing series on the politics of parenting. Stay tuned.